Good afternoon. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the joint meeting of the House and Senate Education Committees. I call this meeting to order at 8:04 a.m. here on Monday, February 9th. We are in the Betty Davis Committee Room here in the State Capitol Building in beautiful downtown Juneau, although it is once again raining. I want to ask folks if they're here in the room, if they could please mute their cell phones. House Education Committee members present today is Co-Chair Representative Story, Co-Chair Representative Himshut. We are joined also by Representative Dibert, Representative Elam, Representative Schwanke, Representative Underwood, and Representative Ted Eichheit. For the Senate Education Committee, we have members present today, Vice Chair, Senate President Mr. Stevens, Senator Keel, Senator Bjorkman. We believe we'll be joined by Senator Runt here shortly, and myself, Senator Lukey Gail Tobin. Please let the record reflect we do have a quorum to conduct business. I want to thank Susan from the Juneau LIO for moderating today's meeting, and also Mary Gwen, as always, from joining us from Senate Records for documenting today's meeting. On the agenda today, we will hear from school board members and public students from across Alaska. This meeting ties in with the annual legislative fly-in of the Association of Alaska School Boards. We are excited to invite school board members and students to testify in small groups by their school district, which I will announce with folks who are coming up to the microphone and then folks who are on deck so that folks know when their name will be called. I do want to remind folks if they could please keep their comments civil and to not impugn motives or characters of any of the committee members or the legislature in their comments. Also, I want to remind folks to please speak into the microphone and speak clearly. State your name at the beginning of your comments. This will ensure that we have a good record of today's conversation. All right. Just a quick reminder, once again, we will be taking questions from committee members, but I do ask folks to keep their questions tightly within the space of a beginning and an end that has a question mark, as we have so many folks ahead of us that we want to make sure we get to everyone here is listed. And we have about 13 folks testifying, 13 groups. We are joined first by Delta Greeley School District. We are joined by their school board president, also the school board president for the Alaska Association of School Boards. Mrs. Phelan, if you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your remarks when you are ready.
Sure. Good morning, and thank you so much for the opportunity to be here. My name is Julia Phelan. I'm from Delta Junction, Alaska. I'm honored to serve as the president of the Association of Alaska School Boards, as well as the vice president of the Delta Greeley School District. But most importantly, I'm the mother of three beautiful children who are getting ready to head to school as we speak back home in Delta. I wanted to thank you all for the work that you've done in education over the past couple of sessions and your support for us, and especially for those who were able to come to our conference yesterday and present the legislative citation. Very meaningful, and we really appreciate the support we feel from you, our fellow elected members. I'd also like to introduce to you my fellow board members behind me from across the state, as well as some of our students. I'm sure we'll have great testimony today. The legislative priorities of the association have been sent to you. Please feel free to reach out if you need another copy. They reflect the core of the message we hear from our students, our staff members, and our communities. You'll see that we have three major priorities around the outside: infrastructure, teacher retention and recruitment, and the financial investment to meet the daily needs of public education. But at the center of it all is our main priority, the well-being of our students. Each of the first three priorities is a vital part of achieving student success, but we never want to lose sight of who is most important: our youth, their needs, their hopes, their safety, their future, which is the future of Alaska. I did want to highlight the infrastructure priority just because in my day job, I have the opportunity to work in many of our rural communities, and I often find myself sleeping in the school while I'm there. We've heard that we're carrying a staggering $2 billion in deferred maintenance, but it's hard to relate to what that really means. I can tell you personally that some of our schools are so riddled with black mold that I developed a headache almost immediately. Some of them have only one working restroom in the entire building, and others are hauling water and using honey buckets. I've woken up to the sound, this is gross, of maintenance workers rushing in because the septic has frozen again and backed up all over the floor, and we scrambled to get it cleaned up before the kids arrive to school. and we have students studying in yurts and man camps after their school burned down. None of these are conducive to the learning environment. While our students are wonderfully resilient, there are maintenance and infrastructure issues that we need to take up as state leaders to set them up for success. I'd also like to just take a moment to reflect on the needs of the need for counselors in our school and more support in the mental health world. We've had some very difficult moments at home in Delta this year, and I'll tell you, there are wonderful partners who've stepped in to help fill the void. There just aren't very many people qualified in the state to step in when times are tough, and we had someone bring their therapy dog and just walk through the halls and meet with the students, and that was the first day my ninth grade daughter came home from school with a smile on her face. Just simple things can make such a difference when times are tough. So whatever we can do to continue to fund not just teacher retention, but also in the mental health space, provide funds for that. It's so vital. I could share stories with you all morning, but I want to make way for others. So I'll close by thanking you for keeping our students and their success at the core of your discussions in the last session and in this one. With so many weighty matters before you, I think of what Jackie Kennedy once said, "If we bungle the job of raising our children, it doesn't matter much what else we've done." From our group of elected officials to yours, thank you for the work you do to secure the future of our children.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments. Are there any questions from committee members? Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we will hear from the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District. We are joined by Morgan Dulian and the student Liam Wade. After that, we will hear from Lower Yukon School District, where we'll be joined by Doug Rexford.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Morgan Dulian of the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District board member.
I'm Liam Wade of the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District. I'm the student rep and a senior at North Pole High School.
Thank you. Since 2018, we have cut $60 million from our budget. Seven schools closed. Gifted and talented programs gutted. Elementary art instructors eliminated. Elementary band and orchestra cut. Class sizes ballooned. Night custodians outsourced. We have been in a storm in Fairbanks, a storm fueled by inadequate funding, uncertainty, and enrollment declines from a shrinking population in interior Alaska. Yet in the midst of this storm, we have built short-term fiscal stability through incredibly hard and politically unpopular decision-making, gut-wrenching decisions. Last year, our decisions led to an unanticipated one-time net positive position of $11.4 million. The net positive position was due to $5 million in lower health care expenses, $2 million in salary savings from vacancies, and $3 million from previous year fiscal impact aid true-ups. Although we have temporary fiscal stability, we ought not lose sight of the $60 million in cuts, and more importantly, the pain those cuts have caused your constituents, our neighbors, our families, and our students, and the reduced educational opportunities for students. I am here today representing a district of grit, of educators who have been asked to do more with less and still show up in 47 below zero and improve student outcomes, and a district of tenacious students who are thriving against all odds.
I received support from the district since I was 3 years old. Hearing complications early in my life delayed my speech and language development. I entered school behind many of my classmates, and for years I felt afraid to speak. Public education stepped in with specialists, patient teachers, and consistent encouragement. They worked with me year after year. They helped me practice sounds, organize thoughts, and build confidence in my own voice. Because of those investments, my life looks different today. I've earned national recognition in public speaking. I presented at conferences. I advocate for students in meetings with community leaders and elected officials. And I know I stand here using the same voice that once felt impossible to use. When I started high school, I had no clear vision for my career. I knew I wanted to be involved, but I did not know where I fit. Teachers and advisors pushed me to try new experiences. I followed that advice and found student government and Future Farmers of America. Those programs changed me. I learned how to run meetings, speak with adults, manage projects, and represent people whose experiences differ from mine. I've met students from across Alaska and my own district who truly care about their schools and their communities. None of this happened by accident. It happened because people in Alaskan schools commit themselves to students. In today's political and educational climate, it is rare to hear the words I'm about to say. I am proud to be an Alaskan student. I am proud to be a student in Fairbanks. Despite all the media talking points about the state of education classrooms around the state, I am here today to tell you honestly and truthfully that I would not be who I am without public education in Alaska. Investments in career and technical education are what drove me to truly find my purpose behind coming to school. I'm excited to go to school because school is where my passions are cultivated and supported. Because of the amazing teachers and mentors in FNSBSD, I can spend my days in our school farm producing fresh produce for my community, which struggles with food insecurity. Because of the amazing teachers and mentors in FNSBSD, I've spoken on Capitol Hill advocating for career technical education. Because of the amazing teachers in FNSBSD, I am here today. Because of Alaska, I have a story to tell, and that story is one I'm proud of. I stand here as one example, a child who struggled to communicate, receive support, practice, and trust. Over time, that child grew into someone who speaks for thousands of peers. Public education is the only thing that made that possible. Thank you for the opportunity to grow into the person I've been today.
And thank you for improving stability by adjusting the BSA amount in statute. Yet without inflation-adjusted funding, we will be forced to make painful decisions again. This session, we need one-time targeted funding for transportation, utilities, the READS Act, and career and technical education through implementation of a long-term fiscal plan and brave decisions. We are proud of our students who have adjusted to new schools due to school closures, who endure 60-minute-long bus rides because we can't afford to run more routes. We are a district of grit. And although we are tough in Fairbanks, we need you to fully fund education.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments. Are there any questions from committee members? Representative Eichheit.
Thank you, Chair Tobin. Through the chair, this is for Mr. Wade. A question and a short comment. Do you believe, you know, based on your testimony, do you believe teachers are heroes?
Through the chair, I believe teachers are heroes is an understatement. I think the fact that every single day somebody comes into work and tries to make a difference in a child's life is astounding. We have 132,000 students enrolling K-12 education and public education in the state of Alaska. And educators, resource managers, administration are the only people who make what you see behind you in the audience today possible. What you see behind you in the audience today is a group of young Alaskans, future voters, future Americans. And I'm so proud to be among them. I'm so proud to have been taught by an Alaskan teacher in an Alaskan school in my Alaskan home, because I'm proud to be an Alaskan. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Dybert.
Good morning, through the chair. Thank you so much for being here, and I just wanted to make a quick comment and then a final question. I'm so glad you're here, and I met you a few weeks at the Student Roundtable, and you are advocating for education in Fairbanks at the Fairbanks Task Force, and we're asking, you know, basic simple things like warm buildings, not sitting five at a science table, learning, sharing science equipment, learning arts, music. I myself learned violin from fourth grade through 12th grade. I loved learning art in school, and I'm okay at Spanish to this day. My question is, what is one class that you wish you could have in high school? To Liam.
Through the chair. One class that I wish I had early on in my high school career is career explorations. One thing that was forced upon me early was, and I'll say it proud, is that I had to push myself to go out and find these organizations and careers that I feel like I would have a place in. One of the things that pushed me super, super hard was Future Farmers of America, FFA, And that pushed me into my career and what I want to go into in my field, which I decided was political science and environmental politics.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments. Seeing as there's no other questions, we'll move on to our next group. Oh, we now will hear from Chatham School District, and after that will be Yakutat School District. Good morning. If you could please identify yourselves, the record, and begin your testimony.
Good morning. I'm Leanne Weichel from the Chatham School Board.
I am Richard Jack Strong from the Chatham School Board.
I am nervous, but I'm here, so I'm in the hot seat already. I am a first-year regional school board member from the Chatham School District. At Chatham, we have just under 200 students and their families from four unique communities, Gustavus, Angoon, Clequan, and Tanaki. Of our 200 collective students, 43 are enrolled in the Chatham Distance School, our homeschool correspondence option for Alaskans. Chatham is diverse, small, and mighty. I'm here today to advocate for two ways you as a collective legislature can improve education in Alaska for all students. Both ways are also cost neutral. I think that's important in today's economic place. They will not require Alaskans to pay any additional taxes. As a new school board member, I am in my first budgeting cycle. It's flabbergasting, the backwards budgeting cycle and process expected by the state government. We are asked to make fiscally responsible budgets based on guesswork and conjecture. In our small district, guessing wrong can cost students a needed teacher, staffing supports for interventions, or differentiation. You can help. You can pass House Bill 261. It will help us reduce alarming uncertainties, improve staffing and staff morale, balance budgets with fidelity, all leading to better student outcomes through a stabilized school funding method that utilizes students count averaging, diminishing uncertainty. That is a run-on sentence if you didn't pick up on that. And as a school board member, we would be grateful. It's very hard to do a fiscally responsive job under the current method. And as a new person, I am overwhelmed by that. The second way you can improve our Alaska students' education is to more fully fund the Alaska Reads Act and our CTE career technical education. And it can be done without any additional tax burden for Alaskans. Cost neutral is what I promised. Let me explain. My husband and I belong to a subscription service called Netflix. We pay the monthly fee and the sales tax already. That sales tax goes to California and stays in California because here in Alaska we need to change our internal structures to allow us to keep the sales tax. We are already paying it. I urge you to pass House Bill 280, the digitized tax bill, because you will bring money to our state economy that is slated to support Alaskan students in reading well by third grade and support the CTE programs our students need and want. In addition, this is the big ask. I'm asking you to leave House Bill 280 separate from any outside request for sales tax increases because I do not expect Alaskans are going to welcome an increased tax on basic needs of survival like food. And this opportunity for education is too important. It's a huge opportunity. Currently, our Chatham School District CTE classes and programs are predominantly grant-funded. They're important for students because of the skilled hands-on learning that allows many students to thrive and will lead to skilled, well-paying jobs that will fill many needed gaps in our Alaskan workforce. Grants are important and allow us to explore new things, but it is well established that it's time to reinvest in vocational education, also known as CTE. The state goal of all students in reading at grade level is both noble and necessary and honestly essential for students' success in life and livelihood. But an underfunded Alaska Reads Act brings many unintentional consequences. I bring to my role as a school board member 20 years of being a first grade teacher and 7 years of being a math and reading interventionist. I've experienced firsthand the unintended consequences of students and staff as underfunded mandates. Here's my analogy. Imagine your spouse makes a really good blueberry pie. You probably picked the blueberries yourself. And you invite a few neighbors over for a piece of pie. But they know how good that pie is, and so they bring their spouse. And pretty soon you find yourself dividing that pie into smaller and smaller pieces. And pretty soon Maybe a couple of your favorite friends or neighbor are just getting crumbs. In my analogy, the pie is our teachers. We are asking them to divide their time, divide their attention, divide their skills and knowledge to work as interventionists. In Chatham, they already work in multi-age classrooms, or sometimes they have a classroom spanning 3 and 4 ages. Like, we have a 3rd through 5th grade classroom this year. What happens in this situation, some kids don't get very much. And one of the unintended consequences is, honestly, some of your higher kids. Because we're so focused on passing these mandated state legislatures with no additional funding or little funding, we're going, okay, you can read, you can read, you can read. Okay, here's your independent work. I need to focus on you because you can't read. And these kids who can read aren't getting pushed to their next best level. They're not getting the differentiation they need. And it's costing us in excellence in the state. And I am worried about it. So remember, we don't want to leave students with crumbs. I urge you to pass House Bills 261 and 280. Both are good for Alaska students and cost neutral. Thank you.
Thank you. I want to attest, this is Jack Strong again. I want to attest to the fact that the way we approach in the state of Alaska, how much funding you're going to get depending on how many students you have, and it's come to be a guessing game almost, because we're not sure how many students we're going to have, and so we're saying, okay, we can depend on these people up here up the road to come in, and people from down the road to come in. We have this many people here, and we write that into the program we have for the funding we're going to get, and we find out that we don't have all the students that we're going to have. And we can't afford to, by not having all those students we're going to have, we can't afford the teachers that we need. And it's, to me, it's like taking a crumpled up piece of paper and with all the writing on it, straightening it out and saying, okay, now read it and comprehend this. And it's just not there. I would like us to fund the students that we have there. And the amount of students and the amount of teachers that we're going to have, I think we got it a little, pardon my language, but bass-ackwards as far as funding our schools. And it's really hurting us in the long run. Our children are not getting the education that they need, basically because of the way the paper shuffle is. And I don't know where the state's going to save all kinds of money by not educating our children the way they should be educated. I was born here in Juneau in 1951, went through the schools in Southeast Alaska, moved to California, and actually got an education there because it just wasn't happening here. I would probably have never made it through high school if I stayed in Alaska. The opportunity is there if you're strong enough to hang in there. She put together a beautiful presentation there, and I'm all for it. And we do need our funding in school. Otherwise, we're giving up on our future. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments. Are there any questions? Representative Himshute.
Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Strong, we have an excellent teacher in Sitka named Jeremy Strong.
Yes.
From the Clukwan area.
My
Is that
nephew.
A relative? He's your nephew. Thank you for letting us have him. Thank you.
Get him back. Representative Story.
Thank you, Chair Tobin. Through the chair, thank you both for being here today and for your words that you shared. I do know that one of the cost savings Chatham School District has was your sharing a superintendent this year with Mount Edgecombe. My concern as a representative from Gustavus and Clukwan is how can our schools get the attention from the superintendent when it's spread? I understand your cost savings, but I'm just wondering the effect of that.
We're keeping a close eye on it. We shared the concern going in, but again, you're hearing it again and again. There's no money. And he has value. He's a strong superintendent. And so it was worth it to try to share. Instead of doing a yearly review, we're reviewing every 3 months, talking through concerns, making sure things are happening the way we hope they will. And so far, so good. We'll report in. Do you want to add anything to
yes,
that?
Yes. My biggest question to that whole approach was that why is it the state wants to do that? You know, they were, to me, the state instigated, let's do this. Why? Is it because they can't afford to or don't want to afford to? And our district is already burdened with not enough money to educate our children in a manner that which we'd like to educate them. And now we've got another one that we got to take on that the state didn't want. That's the way I see it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for your comments. And we will be having hearings regarding the dynamic happening between Chatham and the Edgecombe School District here in the coming weeks. So we will be looking forward to hearing again from your perspective and some of your insights. With that, and seeing no other questions from the committee, we'll now move back up to Lower Yukon School District. After that, we'll have Yakutat School District. Just to give folks a bit of a time check, we're here at 8:30. We're doing great, keeping ourselves to 5 minutes and also to good, succinct comments. And I just want to encourage everyone to stay on this particular pathway.
John Conrad.
Please identify yourselves for the record and begin your comments when you are ready.
Hi, good morning. I'm John Hargis. I'm the superintendent for Lower Yukon School District. I have Conrad Woodhead here with me, who is our CTE director and director of our Kuzlvat Career Academy. Just want to start out by saying thank you. We're gonna keep it positive today. Want to start out by saying thank you to the legislature for not only the job that you do, but for the job that you did last year in helping us out a little bit with some BSA increase. It goes a long way, and we're putting those funds to great use. Kind of the feather that we have in our cap as a district is our Kuzlvat Career Academy program in Anchorage. And Conrad's going to talk just a little bit about what that program looks like and extend an invitation to anyone who's not been over there to tour that facility to maybe come check it out. So go ahead, Conrad.
Good morning. I just want to thank you for allowing me to be here this morning. I want to acknowledge some of the people that are sitting behind me. We have six KCA students who have traveled from Lower Yukon School District. They are in our residential program. We are the only 9-week variable term residential program. We also have semesterly programming and weekly programming with some very key partners. Those partners include Voyage to Excellence, Chugach School District, BBR CTE for our aviation instruction, and then also our T3 intensives that we do with our University of Alaska Fairbanks Bridge program. And so if the six students that are here could stand up behind me, I'd appreciate that. I want to acknowledge you very much. And then Brian Reggiani and Adam Lauer here with T3 as well, our chaperones, and then our very own Jessica Hunt. She is our math teacher at Kuzlvat Career Academy and born and raised in Emonic. So we're very lucky at Kuzlvat. We are a reflection of our region right in the heart of Anchorage, and we're a CTE program without a CTE facility. We have a really good residential program, and then we go and we access a lot of different programming available to our students because we bring our students to them. Really work hard with our students to make sure that they understand what options are available to them. For a lot of our students, they want to be nothing more than in their villages contributing and want to provide services and make their place they live a better place. And for some of our students, they want to see the world. We want to foster that no matter where they end up. So we have students access certified programming, trying to get students ready for the day after high school, and it's life-changing. Variable term programs like ours are doing really good work to provide access to CTE programming and provide those opportunities to students that just don't have the facilities, the personnel, the industry experts to provide those things in our region that is in a cost-effective way. So we flipped the model on its head. We bought a hotel in Anchorage, turned that into the residential access point, and now our students are exposed to all sorts of things. And what we're finding is that for the last 3 years, and we've been in existence for seven, so if you've been coming to KCA one or more sessions the last 3 years, you had a 0% dropout rate. So for our to compare that to our district average, we average about 20 to 22% as a dropout rate, something that KCA is really helping kind of pull from the bottom up, and we're really proud of that work. And it just goes to show that variable term programs like ours that haven't had any increases in funding since 2014 are doing really good work to provide that that instruction and programming to our students. Really glad that BBRCT just got residential funding as well. They got funded at 2014 rates. So just an example of what kind of hills we have to climb as residential programming. To echo what Chatham said, we kind of live and die by the grant cycle to be able to provide these programmings to students. We have three federal grants right now that are helping us pull this work off, while we're continuing to explore three other grants at the moment that aren't even announced yet, just so we're in a position to be ready. And that is exhausting work. Any help that you can to support variable term residential programs like ours and our many partners that we have in other variable term programs would be much appreciated. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments. Are there questions from committee members? Representative Himshue.
Thank you. Through the chair, I just need to understand what you mean by variable term.
Absolutely. So there's year-round residential programs in our state, and there's variable-term residential programs. A lot of those programs are week-long intensives that they're providing. And again, we're the only quarterly boarding school option in the state. We bring students 9 weeks at a time. Students can come back. For many of our students who don't choose to go to year-round boarding school options, they're choosing to come to us. So what that means is, kids get to pick and choose when they're with us. If they want to be home for basketball season, they can be home for basketball season. If they want to be home for moose or goose season, they can be home for moose or goose season. But then they can come to us when they want to, when they're ready and can access CTE programming that they just can't access in their own villages.
Follow up?
Thanks. When you say students can come to you, these are students who are enrolled in your brick and mortar program?
Correct.
Or are these kids from all over the state?
So we were pulling 36 students from LYSD for CT programming. So one of the cornerstones of our program is Anchorage School District for juniors and seniors to access CT courses that happen over at King Tech High School. For the other students that we have come in, they come in with some of our partners for week-long intensives. So we have both in our facility. And then we also have University Bridge programs that are semesterly long. So those are ANSIP Acceleration, and those are Alaska Middle College School, and our students can come and commit to a semesterly long program and do it that way as well. So for the dual credit programming that we have, those are semesterly programmings. And then for the CT access, those are quarterly.
And sir, can you identify yourself just one additional time?
Conrad Woodhead, CT and Residential Director, Lower Yukon School District.
Thank you.
Yep.
Any additional questions from committee members? Well, thank you for your comments. We appreciate you joining us today. We'll now move on to the Yakutat School District, and after that, we will hear from Yukon Flats School District. Thank you for joining us here. If you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony when you are ready.
Yes, thank you. Good morning. My name is Rihanna Brown. I serve as a school board member for the Yakutat School District.
And my name is Rain Pavlik. I'm the Yakutat School Board President.
Okay. I will go ahead and start. Yakutat is a small, remote coastal community, accessible only by boat or plane. Our ferry route has been shut down for the past 3 years, increasing isolation and cost for everything we do. Our school is more than a place of learning. It is the center of our community, our culture, and our future. Because of our of our isolation, the cost of educating students in Yakutat is significantly higher. Teacher recruitment, retaining staff, powering our buildings, and transporting supplies all cost more. Weather can shut down our travel entirely, but learning must continue. Teacher recruitment, Yakutat is also facing a serious housing crisis. The lack of adequate housing and infrastructure makes it extremely difficult to hire and retain educators simply because there is nowhere for them to live. When education funding is uncertain or insufficient, rural districts like ours feel the impact first and the hardest. Our students deserve the same opportunities as any student in Alaska, regardless of their zip code. Stable, equitable education funding allows us to retain quality educators, support student services, and provide safe, consistent learning environments. I am here today to ask you to support policies and funding that recognize the true cost of rural education and respect local school boards' ability to meet their community's needs. Education must remain top priority in Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you, and hello. Thank you for having us. This is my third year on the school board, and I also have a master's in education with 4 years teaching experience and 1 year as a substitute teacher. I'm a parent of 2 young daughters coming up in the Yakutat School District. Yakutat is a small rural community in southeast Alaska with limited access to neighboring and outside communities. Decisions made at the Capitol have direct and profound impacts on communities like ours. Life in our village is becoming increasingly difficult to make ends meet, and while these decisions are wrapped in the cloak of well intention, policies and mandates passed without a fiscal plan put insurmountable pressure on the backs of our hardworking educators who are already overwhelmed. With the steady decline of population across the state comes the inevitable decline of student enrollment. With that, we need to uplift the families we have by passing policies that support families and their choice to live in the rural parts of our state. The ability to choose is the foundation of freedom. However, in the current state, there's an illusion of choice for families like mine who want to stay in places like Yakutat. With increasing economic pressure, it's becoming enticing to leave our small communities and go somewhere where the quality of life is better supported. There are continued legislative measures that put pressure on us to move away from the communities we come from. We need to invest in student achievement, not by passing more mandates, but by funding the mandates that are already in place. We need to introduce legislation that support our schools and families. We need public school systems that is desirable in every corner of the state so when families are deciding on where to live, the quality of education will never be the question. Please pass legislation that makes it easier for our families to stay and come back to our close-knit communities like Yakutat. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions? Well, thank you again for testifying today.
Thank you.
We'll now move on to Yukon Flat School District and then Southwest Region School District. Hello and welcome. If you could please identify yourself for the record.
My name is Rhonda Pitka. I'm chief of the Village of Beaver, and I've been a school board member for Yukon Flats since, well, I just got reelected, so it was 2024. This is probably my third term as a school board member. I usually don't have time to come down to the legislative fly-in, but I really appreciate the education that we get from the AASB. It's been so instrumental in making me a better school board member. Our school district has 165 students spread across an area the state of the size of Michigan. It's right up there. It's labeled Gwich'in. Minus the Canadian part. But our villages are remote and they're fly-in only. We only have one village that's on the road system. And they've also got their own challenges. Our schools are falling apart from the lack of basic maintenance. Some of these schools are 45 years old. I started second grade in Crookshank School when it was built in 1984. And we have not had any significant upgrades to our school since then. Our heating systems were built in the 1980s when gasoline and heating fuel was like a dollar a gallon. So they're over-engineered and they're not really fit for the temperature. We're either really, really hot or really, really cold, and there's no in between. The lady before me who said she stayed in a lot of these schools, yeah, I've been there. Every time we travel to rural communities, whether it's for meetings or events or basketball games, there's always a problem with the sewer system and the water system. One of our smallest schools, Chelkitsik, has about, I think, 13 students this year. But they've had this water issue for like 20 years, and it was even redlined on the governor's budget 1 year as a direct veto, which clean water for students, that seems basic to me. It's been such a challenge to, I guess, stay on the school board in these challenging times. I work a lot in subsistence regulation work, so the school board for me was sort of my safe place, where I could, you know, really learn a lot about education in our region, and, you know, learn about what the kids need. So even in speaking with the young people here today, they told me that they want basic behavioral health services. They want access to counselors. They're facing a mental health crisis, and it's harming them all, and it's causing them to not be able to finish school. One of the young ladies from Minto told me that they have a teacher housing situation that hasn't been fixed in a couple of years. The teacher had a series of unfortunate events, and she broke her arm, and she wasn't able to take care of her basic needs in her teacher housing because it was also 50 below for 5 weeks in the interior of Alaska. So pretty much everything froze up that could freeze. That happens in our school too. You know, we have maintenance people that are working on about $20 an hour. And I was looking at some of the job listings, like you can't even hire a janitor for $20 an hour. I think they probably pay that at Wendy's right now. It's caused a problem in our communities because these positions are usually reliable and, you know, throughout the year. But with the lack of decent pay for the position, holding together a 45-year-old school with duct tape and wire and one guy and whatever little tools he has, it's become a serious problem. The deferred maintenance backlog is, I think Julia Phelan stated earlier, it was like $2.1 billion. That kind of thing doesn't get resolved overnight. You know, these are issues that are like 40 years in the making. I keep on bringing up 40 because I just had a birthday recently. And it wasn't the 40-year one. These issues make it difficult for us to retain students, so we frequently have issues of declining enrollment in our areas. Pretty much the only thing right now that's keeping kids in school is the basketball program in Fort Yukon. Go Eagles! So So sports are really incredibly important to our students in rural Alaska, and that's one of the things that was a big shock to me coming from a tiny school in Yukon Flats where I was raised. I didn't realize that basketball was such a big deal in Alaska until I got to some of the bigger schools and they had enough kids for a team. In our small communities, we're really close-knit, and you can tell I hope the catcher caught it. You can tell the tight-knittedness of the community based on our relationships with each other. And we've had pretty decent success in hiring a couple of local teachers and retaining them, but they have the same challenges that our non-resident teachers have with our teacher housing issues. We have incredibly cold weather. It was 50 below for 5 weeks, and then it hit a three-day streak of minus 70 below in the interior. So, you know, at those temperatures, nothing's running, nothing's working. So after that incident, you know, we continued to have these issues, which I feel like could have been a little bit better handled, you know, by our community. But we've also had this overarching federal, I was going to say mess. I don't even know how to describe it other than mess. But that's left us with, like, the thinnest margin ever to deal with these things that come up. You know, these things happen. Freeze-ups happen. Emergencies happen. Fires happen. Our schools are often the heart of our community. There were times in the past when we've had 50 firefighters staying at our school in the summertime because of the horrific fires that were in our region. So I would just ask that you do everything in your power to ensure that a decent spending bill is passed. I don't know the specifics of the politics or whatever, but, you know, our kids are really worth it. And I thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments. Are there any questions? Well, I want to thank you again for joining us today. I'm going to do a little bit of a mix-up as we do have one of our committee members who has to head up to finance. So after this, I'm going to ask if the Juneau School District can come up so that we can hopefully get them.
Juneau
Maps. Nope. I think unfortunately he has to head out now.
It's now or never for me.
Go.
Juneau right now.
Well, sorry about that, folks. We'll stay on the agenda. We're going to have Southwest Region and then Juneau School District.
Oh, sorry. Hey, Kate, I'm sorry for the confusion. No, you're good. You're good.
Good morning.
If you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony when you are ready.
Good morning. Thank you so much for allowing us to be here, and thank you for having this joint session to hear us today. Thank you for all of your work that you're doing for Alaska. I know you have a real hard job. And so education touches everything, doesn't it? Touches everything. With that, my name is Kay Andrews, and I serve as the president of Southwest Region School District, and I'm here in strong support for stable investment in education, particularly for rural and small communities like ours. Education challenges. Education is not just a line item in a budget. It is a foundation of our workforce, public safety, and long-term economic stability. When education is underfunded, rural communities feel it first. Staff turnover, limited student supports, aging and inadequate facilities. In many communities, as you know and are aware, schools are more than our classrooms. They are community centers. They are safe places for our children. Yet schools are being asked to do more with less, without the resources needed to respond sustainably and healthily. Mental health support for students is an urgent need. We discussed this last year, the year before. As many other things, as you know, if you've addressed as well. Our region recently experienced another suicide, which deeply affected our students and our only regional counselor. We serve pre-K through 12th grade across 8 schools. And I think it was mentioned before that our region was the size of Idaho, I think. Excuse me. To address this gap, we support the Behavioral Health Aid Program, which also needs help and funding. So if you do come across that arena, please support that. But that program, which is tailored to the needs of rural districts, can grow to meet our needs, the demand that the students and the staff, mental health services, and provide services with cultural safety. I'm sorry, my tooth was just pulled, and I'm trying to talk.
Am I doing okay?
Yes.
When you get old, your body gets brittle. Okay. Anyway, okay. So, but what the school district did to address this, because, you know, we don't have the funding to, we, you know, to have school nurses, et cetera, so forth. So what we did is we launched an app this school year, and it connects students and staff to health professionals anytime, anywhere, 24/7, 367. And it provides support, you know, despite the absence of our the need that we have locally. Excuse me. So, legislative support. Thank you so much. I want to go back to all of your work that you're doing now, and House Bill 261, we strongly support House Bill 261, and with consideration that changes do not negatively affect the student count period for our short-term residential funding, and that's our CTE program where we've collaboratively collected our money to make our CTE programs work for our students. We also support House Bill 78. So with added language, if you will, allowing PERS Tier 1 or Tier 2, it's probably hardly Tier 1, but Tier 2, including paraprofessionals earning teaching credentials to remain in PERS if they become teachers. So if you could make that language, that would be beneficial. And then House Bill 28, we fully support the teacher and state employee student loan program as a tool to attract and retain educators in rural communities. We fully support that bill, so thank you. In reference to facilities and funding, we've heard it, you know it, you feel it, you see it. I hope that you go out and see it in our rural communities, please, so you could see and understand exactly what we're talking about. We need a safe environment for our students, our staff. They need to feel safe when they go to school. So facilities and funding. Our district has over $106 million in deferred maintenance, and it grows every year. You know that. It grows every year if you're not dealing with it. And our top three priorities in the six-year capital improvement plan totaling $36.7 million, which grows every year. We urge the legislature to allocate additional funding for deferred maintenance across the state to keep schools safe and operational. So we need the educational funding that is predictable, you've heard it, equitable, you've heard it, and responsive to the real costs. Investing in education is investing in healthy students, strong communities, and Alaska's future workforce. So thank you for your time and consideration of having this joint session today. Thank you for your great work that you're doing. And, you know, I could talk about transportation and other areas too, but that's a whole another area that should be looked at as well. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Brianna.
Seeing questions from committee members, we'll now move on to the Juneau School District. After that, we will hear from the Northwest Arctic Borough School District.
Juneau.
Hello and good morning. If you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your comments when you are ready.
Hello, my name is Maddie Bass. I'm from Juneau, and today I would like to share. Oh, you have to introduce. Sorry.
and I'm Steve Whitney, Juneau School Board, and thank you, members through the chair. Thank you, members of the committee, for having us. And like Ms. Bass, I'm the child of teachers. But her family actually taught my children, and I think my kids gave her gray hair. So with that, I think I'm in debt to the Bass family, so I'm going to defer to Ms. Bass.
Thank you to the committee through the chair for having me today. I would like to share my experience as a student in an underfunded district. I have never had the opportunity to learn in a classroom that was funded enough to have materials for everyone. since elementary school. My teachers have had to send out lists, markers, pencils, glue sticks for parents to buy so that children could participate in class activities. Even with the recent consolidation of schools in my district, which caused the firing of multiple teachers, the cutting of programs, and more, there is not enough. Today, the situation has deteriorated, and I am seeing my teachers being forced to work multiple jobs. And in some cases, I am seeing my teachers having to decide between being teachers and having a job that provides them adequate health care. Nobody should be forced to make those decisions, especially not the people that are growing and educating a new generation. My father was an educator in Alaska for 27 years. He taught for 3 years in Kodiak, then for 24 years here in Juneau. I have seen him go into school hours early and stay hours late to give students extra help. I have seen him come home from meetings stressed and tired from fighting from his rights as an educator and the rights of his students for the umpteenth time. I have seen him go into work while sick so that his students wouldn't have to go without an adult in the classroom because there were just not enough substitutes in our district. And when he finally retired, I saw the weight that was lifted off of his shoulders, a weight that was much too heavy and that he had been carrying for much too long. When teachers are stressed, students are impacted. When teachers are overworked and underpaid, they cannot give their best to teaching. That means courses are getting cut or they are only offered once a day. The classes that are on the chopping block for next year, classes like oceanography, art classes, Tlingit language classes, and more, are the classes that make school worth coming to for so many students. I recently completed the course selection for the 2026 to 2027 school year, what will be my junior year of high school, and I am worried that I will have to choose between classes in my core curriculum. This impacts my education. The simple fact is, I should not have to choose between taking science or math as a high school student. As a 15-year-old, I should not be missing class time to testify in front of legislators, to ask for more money so that my teachers can afford to live, so that my peers and I can have the enriching experience of education. Last year, we got a BSA increase through HB 69, and this helped. But the simple fact is that it is not enough to support Alaska school districts. So I'm asking you, please, do as much as you can for me, for my teachers, and so my little sister will not have to stand up here and testify when she goes to high school in 4 years. Every penny counts. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions from committee members? Would you like to wrap up, sir?
Yes, please. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, the committee. I've got a few points that I'd like to reiterate. First, yesterday it was brought up to us that when resources are tight, people turn on each other. And it's true in our schools, and I think it's true statewide right now. We're definitely in a hard time, and I appreciate those of you trying to navigate us through this. As you heard, teachers are hurting. I was on the board from 2016 to 19, and after I lost my mom, I took some time off, and I recently came back. We've got quite a few principals. There are only two still left in our district from where I was there before. We've lost teachers, but on our administration staff, they're almost all brand new. There's only two left, and one of them is about to retire. One of the things that we're going to cut before was our IT department, and I went and talked to the programmers. Like any organization, we need programmers. We need payroll. And all the people who are working there, they earn less than the people working for the city, work less for the state, less than the feds who earn less than the private sector. Every single one of those people is gone since 2019. The turnover has been brutal. Another point I want to make, I want to reiterate, there's a bill out moving average for student counts. When I was on before, one of the things I hated was we couldn't give new teachers continuing contracts. And there were so many families with young kids who they just were perpetually brand new teachers, never got tenure, and never knew if they were going to get a permanent job or not. This one seems like there is a cost, but it seems like low-hanging fruit to me. It's the uncertainty is just no way to run a railroad. It's wasteful, basically. And I know I'm getting close on time. My youngest recently, he's a biochemist. I lost my mom to Alzheimer's. My father-in-law is a Vietnam vet who loaded Agent Orange, and he's suffering from Parkinson's. My youngest wants to go into pharmacology and create treatments for to cure these diseases. And so the first place we went to is U.S. World News to look at grad schools. And if you look at global universities, I mean, in pharmacology, that's one place in the U.S. still comes out on top. And Harvard was on top. But most of the schools were in China. If you go to chemical engineering, this just blew me away. The top school is number 57 in the United States, Georgia Tech. Almost all of the top 100 are based in China. So, and this comes into, like, if you're trying to refine rare earth minerals, we can try to stockpile the minerals, but that doesn't do us a lot of good if we don't have the expertise to actually develop them. And when President Trump tries to go up and create trade deals with President Xi can say, well, I'm going to not give you rare earth minerals, and you can't build electric motors. And they have us over a barrel. It's important. Education is kind of important to the well-being and strength of our nation. It's difficult, it's expensive, but there are some really big implications for not taking it seriously, and we're not doing as well as we once did. And again, we're in a hard situation, and I appreciate all your work, and I know this is going to be a difficult bipartisan struggle, and I appreciate your work in this. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments. Mm-hmm. Seeing no questions, we'll move on to our next invited testifiers from Northwest Arctic Borough School District. After that, we will hear from the North Slope Borough School District.
North Slope?
Nope. Northwest Arctic.
Northwest Arctic, sorry.
They were. Well, we will move on to North Slope Borough School District. For Northwest Arctic, if you can hear us and you're in the gallery on the second floor, come on down so we can get you in the queue. After this, we will hear from the Upiat School District. Hello and welcome. If you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony when you are ready.
Good morning. My name is Frida, and I have Faith Brower and John Elgak.
Good morning.
The North Slope Borough School District has about 1,900 students and covers 94,800 square miles. That makes it one of the largest school districts by land area in the United States. It stretches across Alaska's entire northern coastline from the Canadian border all the way west towards the Chukchi Sea. This makes it difficult with transporting school freight, teacher housing, and teacher retention. Our district teacher recruitment and retention competes with districts that are on the road system. Despite our challenges, our district has outperformed the state percent change for movement of students on the Alaska STAR test in grades 3 through 9, from need support to approaching proficient, as well as moving students from approaching proficient to proficiency in literacy. Our greatest leap towards proficiency was in grade 3, with over 20% less students in the needs support category for over 3 years. SB 184, School Bond Debt Reimbursement, funding for school construction and major maintenance. Our rural schools are in dire need of construction and maintenance. Our schools in the rural areas are used for emergency shelters, Christmas feast, and Eskimo dances and community events. John Elgak from Koktuvik will be testifying on SB 184.
Good morning. Kung Yuk is my Inupiaq name, and English name is John Ogab. I am from Kokdovik, Alaska, and I am here to testify on SB number 184. I would like to share the impact of this bill to my school and community. It was a windy, cold night, February 7th, 2020. Our school was going up in, our gym and school was going up in flames, approximately around 3 a.m. The fire department water lines froze, so we had to get help from Barrow, Utqiagvik. They came in to assist with the fire, but it was too late. Fast forward 6 years later, December 1st, 2025, we celebrate our new gym with joy and excitement. Picture this, our gym is not connected to our learning facility, our school. So we have to travel to the gym every Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays for recess time. Our class is currently located on a tribal land in a facility I refer to as Man Camp or Conexes. Can you imagine during class time the sewer wastewater backing up in the classroom? That's a tough thing to experience. We the students exhibit strength, perseverance, and commitment towards education and attendance did not wither. Hence the importance this bill be passed. It is shared that we are the only school district to fully fund the rebuild of a new school. I am glad that help is on the way in March of 2026. UIC will be coming back to build the school phase. But we are still in need of $33 million for the completion of our school at Harold Carrillo in Kokdovik. I trust that a glimpse of my current learning environment provided clarity as to why I support this bill. Thank you.
Uvlalotuk. My name is Faith Brower. I am a student representative with the North Slope Borough School District. I am here in support of HB 105, which focuses on mental health education, and to share why this bill is important for individuals, families, and communities. Mental health affects how we show up every day. When someone is struggling, it can make school, work, and relationships a lot harder. I've seen how not having support can affect people I care about, and it can really take a toll on families and communities. Families feel it through stress, worry, and sometimes loss. Communities feel it when people turn to unhealthy coping or when no one knows how to step in and help. I strongly support HB number 105 and that it will take an important step towards addressing these challenges by strengthening mental health education. This bill will help people recognize early warning signs, build healthy coping skills, and seeking help before reaching a crisis. It also reduces stigma by encouraging open and honest conversations about mental health. Investing in education and prevention leads to healthier youth, stronger families, and safer communities. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions? Thank you again for joining us this morning. We will now hear, or we will try once again, for Northwest Arctic Borough School District. After that, we will hear from Upiat School District and then Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. Just want to remind everyone once again, we're doing great on time. Let's keep this going. I feel very strongly that we will finish exactly at 10 o'clock. Hi, welcome. If you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony when you are ready.
Okay. My name is Martha Groot. I am from Kotzebue, Alaska, and I am testifying on bill number 210. I support this bill because I feel like a lot of kids don't even know about their culture, like how to hunt, speaking subsistence, or even basic way of life. Even me, I only know so little about my culture. The stuff I learned is from stuff my teachers from out of state gave me while they just sat there and did nothing. My peers and I want to learn more, my culture more thoroughly than just sitting down with a book and someone who knows nothing. I also think if there was more about their culture, the attendance rate would go up because people would be more excited to go to class. Also, once they learn more about their culture, they would be able to take the things they learned and use it in everyday life. And their culture won't die and live on. That is all I have to say, so thank you very much for listening to what I had to say and to take this bill into consideration. And I hope you have a good rest of the day. And once again, thank you for listening to what I had to say.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Sylvia Oviak, and I'm here for Siloc. Our school is struggling right now because the water at our school has become unsafe to drink. During the break, the water went bad and made a lot of students and teachers sick, which forced us to stay home for a long time at our bad time. Our school actually had to close it down for a few weeks. It ended up being months next. Just to deal with it, now it's winter. We have a new problem because the pipes keep freezing and breaking in our school. It makes our plumbing bad, and it makes our whole students get more sick from the smell. From high school side to the whole, almost to the elementary side. It's cold out here for the students on learning when we could not have basic water in our school. Now that's our freezing outside our door. Gosh. Rusty pipes are keep bursting and leaving us about water, without water for a week. Impossible to focus on our classes, and we're building six.
If you could get a little bit closer to the microphone.
Oh, okay. It's impossible for us students when we are in the building and it stinks and we can't even use the bathrooms. It's really just a school and unsafe for a basic thing. We're working plumbing, so we can't continue our work. Can you hear me? I can't read this. Well, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions?
No.
Excellent. Well, thank you again for testifying and joining us here today. We'll now hear from the Upiat School District and then the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. We will roll Upiat down to the bottom of the agenda if the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District will now join us. And after that, we will hear from, and I apologize in advance, Kashinamut School District.
Good morning, Chair Tobin and the rest of the esteemed colleagues that are sitting here today. I feel a little awkward because I was told never to have my back turned to whoever.
Yeah, if you could please speak directly to the microphone, look right at me, and don't forget to identify yourself for the record.
Oh, I won't. Yeah. My name's Tim Doherty. I am a Kenai Peninsula Borough School District member, vice president. Today I'm torn between two loyalties. I have a duty to the KPBSD district because of my elected office and that kind of stuff. And the other thing I'm torn between is my passion for kids in Alaska. So today I prepared two testimonies at 5 a.m. today. I couldn't realize which one I would probably present, but I chose what I always did, and that's one for kids. So I'm a 40-year educator. I'm not 40 years old in Alaska, and this is my fifth year on the school board. There were many wonderful moments during my career, but the proudest that I am is my Inupiat name of Quinnick. We were out camping on the tundra at Anituvik Pass, and a little kindergarten girl looked at a porcupine, and she said, "Mr. Tim." And I looked at her, and I said, "What does that mean to you?" And she says, "Well, you're all prickly and gruff on the outside, but soft and gushy inside." So so I'm going to go with that today. Today I want to speak of child abuse. In the years of my involvement in Alaskan education, I have systematically watched us neglect young people and victimize them by not meeting their needs. Not funding education or schools and assuming that a one-size-fits-all models has created a crisis we may never recover from. My idea to help mitigate these injustices has nothing to do with the volatile term of the BSA. In order to invest in our kids, we need to think out of the box and make some one-time allocations to kickstart a recovery from the potential death of our Alaskan education system. First thing we need to do is quit telling our students that they are failing. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. The two tests that are often cited as indicators of our effectiveness have no statistical validity and are irrelevant for Alaska students and only stokes an ignorant political agenda that is driven by social media zealots. Let's help stop the emotional burden that students feel with high-pressure testing. The highest day of absenteeism on the North Slope was the day that we gave standardized tests. I believe that we need to delve into our constitutional budget reserve and create a state fiscal plan to invest in the biggest resource that we have, and that's our children. If we one-time fund the following several big-ticket items, we can start on a road to recovery. When we decided to mandate No Child Left Behind, we threw out the baby with the bathwater. I still remember the day they pulled the wood shop equipment out of my wood shop, sent it to auction, and told me to go teach a core curriculum. At that time, we abused the population of the school that loved getting their hands dirty, finding a livelihood. We need to fund CTE, or used to be called VOC-Ed, in all districts and start preparing nearly 75% of our Alaska school children for meaningful lifetime jobs, not just higher education. Next, the cost of transportation and fuel in our district is killing our budgets. On the Kenai, we drive 3,341 miles daily. In the village that I'm most familiar with, they went weeks without fuel to heat their homes and had to rely on the school as a sanctuary. Please invest in a solution to get our kids to school, keep them warm. Buildings are falling apart, and the facilities that were once the gems of our communities are in shambles. Can you imagine the helplessness and despair a student may feel when they walk in and see windows broken and roofs leaking? This is another form of emotional trauma students suffer when they walk into our substandard rundown buildings. As far as educational programs, I could go on and on, but two really stand out. We need to fully fund the rest of the REEDS Act. It just makes sense to finish funding something that is obviously very successful. Next, an allocation for implementation of a statewide pre-K program that is stable. I've seen students that come to their first year of school that have never seen a book before. And I've also witnessed the look of pride in the eye of a little who reads their first words or crafts a sentence. This is the first step to break the chain of neglect in some places in the state. In summation, we focus exclusively on the Big Five districts, a few outliers, and maybe charter schools because that's who makes the most noise. We are working on school consolidations and closures that are demoralizing our students in the Kenai Peninsula District. However, the schools that need the most assistance alter state scores and are in crisis are rarely mentioned in our discussions of school improvement. Abandonment and neglect and negligence are behaviors of which the cycle of abuse is exacerbated in areas of the state off the road system. Please consider using some CBR funds to help alleviate the disparities that have generated a futile feeling in the education delivery of our state. It's not throwing money away if we save a child and build esteem through the confidence that schools are safe, appealing, and pertinent to the place they live. Thank you. I'd also like to introduce my colleague here, Ms. Kelly Cizik. She is a representative from our Soldotna area. Thank you for coming. Questions? Would you like to?
No? All right. Seeing no questions from committee members, I want to thank you again for your testimony. We will now hear or try once again to hear from Upiat School District. Excellent. If you could please identify yourself for the record and then begin your testimony when you are ready.
Hi. My name is Melanie Kasayuli Alexi. I'm from Hi, my name is Melanie Kasayuli Alexi. I'm from Makichuk, and I represent the Upiat School District. We have three schools in the communities of Akichuk, Akiak, and Tuluksak. Thank you for giving this opportunity again this year to testify for the. And thank you for the increase of the BSA. Please consider a state statute to increase it annually. Our school needs in all three communities is major maintenance, along with the teacher housings. Our schools serve as emergency shelters. Please invest in our schools. Treat education as a whole state investment, since our children are our future. We have good students. They would be thriving with adequate funding. Our students lack full staff. Very limited CTE programs. In each school, we do not even have guidance counselors. I've noticed how much education matters in our schools. YSD schools need major maintenance. Their outdated facilities falling apart. But our students still show up with determination to be successful. For one of our schools in Tuluksak, their ceilings are leaking. Their water and sewer needs to be updated, even their electricity, like any other dwellings. Our students still show up. Are we going to be heard, or are we just going to keep coming back and testifying? And this is introduce himself.
Hello, my name is Davion Jasper. I am from Akiak. I'm representing the UPH School District. A few major problems our school/community has. But first, let's start with the school. The classrooms we have are small. Classrooms could fit 12 to 15 students without being so absurd. And that puts a lot of stress on the teachers. Now, about the community, for months, our local store hasn't had anything. It's hard because not every family has a vehicle to go down to Bethel. or doesn't have finance to pay for a plane ticket. Moving on from that, another big problem we face is power outages. Just recently, we had a big power outage. We didn't have power for 48 days. After power was restored, power would go out daily. It hurts families that run off Toyo stoves. And families that do have wood stoves don't have any wood to keep warm. This is all I got to say for the school and community of Akyak. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions? Thank you. Thank you both for joining us. We will now move on to Kashunamut School District, and after that we will hear from Huna School District with final wrap-up comments from the current executive director of the Alaska, or the Association of Alaska School Boards. Hi, and welcome. If you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony when you are ready.
Good morning. My name is Melina Pingaik, and this is Lucia Patrick. We are here to speak on the behalf of students at Chivac School. Every day, we see the impact of not having enough resources for our education. One of the biggest challenges we face is a lack of funding for our students' elective classes. Elective classes are more than just extra courses. They are where we discover what excites us and where we find talents, and when we could discover our future paths.
When these classes are cut or limited, it feels like doors being closed on our potential.
We also don't have a dedicated student counselor. Some of our peers struggle with stress, anxiety, or uncertainty about the future. Without a counselor, there is no one to guide us, listen to us, or help us navigate these challenges.
It's a heavy struggle to carry alone, and too many students are left feeling unaware about what to do.
On top of this, student engagement is low because of the fewer opportunities and the lack of school spirit. Without some of these needs, it is hard to feel connected to our school community.
When students feel disconnected, it impacts learning, motivation, and confidence.
We are asking for your help by increasing funding for elective programs, hiring a full-time student counselor, and supporting institutions that students get involved. You can create a school where every student needs to thrive.
We are not asking for much. We are asking for the basic tools and support every student needs to thrive.
Thank you for listening and for considering how your support can truly make an impact for students and our community.
Thank you. Thank you. And can you once again state your name for the record?
My name is Lucia Patrick.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, come please sit.
No, let him in. Sit.
Oh.
Sorry.
Okay.
Thank you for chairing this session. And I'd like to thank my students back home from Chivac. We're near Bethel on the coast, and we experienced quite a bit of two storms, Murbach and Helan, but we're all okay. I see some of familiar faces that, and with my colleague back then, and the story, and I'd like to welcome you guys. First time I see some of you guys, so thank you for being here, and thank you for listening to us. We all represent our young kids from K to 12, and I want to start off by, we have a preschool back home, which is operated for about 6 years, and the intention of that was, it comes from a real life story of my own. Two of my kids were not eligible for Head Start, and I was furious on the first year. But on the second year, they're allowed to come in, whether they're fully not qualified or not. But that's a head start. They focus on emotional and these kinds of learning. And the preschool focuses on academics. They can already run and balance, but they're focusing on how to read and how to put their names on. I have a story too. I mean, I wouldn't go through it, but That's a real difference right there. When we have the preschool in our district school, inside the school, we dedicated a room for that. Otherwise, we had to go out of the school building in order to accommodate that. But since it's been 6 years, I'm sorry to say that I didn't bring any data with me, but if you can believe me, our scores are going up. If we didn't do nothing at all, maybe our scores would be different right now. But these kids that were immersed in preschool, they're going to help us in the long run in education of K through 12, especially when the state sanctions these tests to be taken and possibly pass a test. So funding of preschool is really important. That's where our districts will start to thrive. Not immediately, maybe after 6, 7, 8 years, but they will thrive. And one problem we have was teacher. You know, I guess you guys heard of it, that we're having a teacher nationwide shortage. And I want to thank somebody who thought of outside country importing teachers, in this case, Philippines. And there's a problem right there. They have a limited stay here since they're out of country. And we've been doing really good with our teacher staff from Philippines because we share each other. They share their food and we share our food. And how we do things, we just intermingle. And they're human beings. They're no other different than us right here. So with that teacher shortage problem that we had, I'm thankful that we imported some teachers and they have a limited stay on a visa, and somehow any one of you guys can think up ways to extend their stay here, because teachers back home want to come back again, but their limited time will not let them allow to come back. And some of them have a doctorate degree. I mean, they're up there dedicated to education with doctorate degrees, and we have one in our district with a doctorate degree from the Philippines. Our electric rates will soon be up. I mean, I don't know how come they're bringing it up, maybe to look at inflation terms. I think they're doing that. And we ourselves should, in education, follow suit, because every year it's different on approach to finances, and we should focus on our kids. Kids are a natural resource. We got gold, oil, all this timber, but the kids, they're human. We're human, and we should take care of them. It's our obligation to take care of them. We don't want them to come upon things that were not meant to be. Like, if we're fully funded, we'll be happy on terms of finances. But we don't often see the administrators going like this, oh no, oh no, oh no. They don't let us in. I mean, we don't know if they're worrying about this money. How will we? Well, it's our job to worry and figure it out. But we would be in much better situation as Alaska as a whole to be fully funded. I mean, I seen news in Anchorage, KTU TV, with people picketing about education. I didn't want to see people picketing around Anchorage to get their message out. I want this education committee to fully fund our intentions on education, so we have young people that will take over our place. Even everybody in this room, the young people are right here. They'll take over us. Even me, they'll take over me. So let's give them the best. Let's not let them worry or things of that nature. We're humans. Let's work together, and I'll be willing to work with you guys. I'm pretty open, and I got a lot of ideas. If it was up to us to fund education, we would do it in less than 1 month in our district with all kinds of fundraising activities. Basketball is number one, so every time we have basketball, we have full house. And the other day, we had kids, 66 in all, drivers by snow machine going from one village to another. The drivers aren't usually charged at the gate at that time, but somebody thought of it at the last minute to charge the drivers to get more money. That's what we do, Amina. Back then we were under a native time and all these things that come together. Yeah, I got a bunch of bills listed here, and some of you guys' names are in here, and I'd like to thank you guys for bringing these bills up. If you guys didn't bring these up, who will bring them up? So I want to thank you, Amen. My thank yous are going to extend all the way outside to the room and keep going. So I can't thank you guys enough for being here and on this legislative session. I think it's 35th. Yeah, so let's make it the best 35th on education, and let's not have people picketing on education to be heard. Let's support each other. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Sir, can you please say your name into the record?
Oh, sorry about that.
That's okay.
I got carried away. John Etchick from Chivak. Kishunamut is our first village name. Kishunamut. Yeah, we moved twice on our own with the Catholic Bishop of Northern Alaska helping us, so we didn't require any state funding or anything like that. We just moved. So our original village was right smack near the coast, 2 miles away from the Bering Sea, and the floodwaters moved us inland 15 miles to Old Chivak, and they thought they were protected 15 miles inland, but they were wrong. So we had to have our two runners run to our neighboring village to ask for permission to move to a high ground in a hill, and now we're fully protected thanks to our forefathers. So Kishunamit is our origination.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. We will now hear from our last school district, Hoonah School District, before we receive wrap-up comments from the Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. Hi. If you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your comments when you are ready.
Okay.
If you guys could get close to the mic so that everyone in the back can hear you.
Of course. Hello, my name is Nathan Fonts, and I'm a high school history teacher from Hoonah City Schools. When I was as old as Raina here, I learned in my civics class that democracy was built upon compromise. And as much as I would love to offer that any compromise feels like too deep of a concession for our schools. How are we, as Huna City Schools, expected to compromise on our failing generator, which has already caused that loss of valuable class hours? How are we supposed to compromise on our broken water boilers, which provoked a similar question each morning? Mr. Fonts, why is it so cold in here? How are other districts expected to compromise when their buildings are closed, when our students live in camps, when the sewage builds in their classrooms, when their power fails too? How can we compromise? We are retreating to our core functions, and those core functions are also failing. What am I supposed to say when my students are cold? This infrastructure was built with stability, fiscal or otherwise, in mind. And now that that stability is gone, as we can expect with the cyclical boom-bust cycle of our state, how can we adapt? Let me point out the contradiction. We need money that we struggle to have. To offer a synthesis, a dialectic, a compromise feels impossible. I would like to state firstly that I believe that funding, however possible, is my priority, as is echoed by my superintendent, my board, and my students. If, and that is a heavy if, that cannot be resolved, then my proposed compromise is to devise plans for downsizing. I would like to acknowledge Fairbanks with their ability to respond to collapse gracefully with their centralized leadership. I would like to ask warmly for our representatives to consider guiding us through upcoming turmoil if we cannot have our requests met. It's not easy for me to say. The world will move regardless of our funding, and I must prepare my students to become the next leaders of their town, their region, their districts, and their state regardless. Raina here has demonstrated quite a bit of resolve in this. She's taken much initiative over the course of this trip, and therefore she comes forward not to represent merely me, but also my issues, but to represent her students. In that sense, I hope that she can be a leader in the future soon. So I would very kindly like you to listen to her as she says her piece. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Raina Sherklin. I'm a sophomore in Huna City Schools, and I'm speaking on number SB18. I'm against this bill. I feel that the bill will remove a lot of decisions for schools and parents. Many parents, like mine, have invested much for their child's education just for it to be banned in schools. Like personal devices, computers are not cheap, but many parents have invested in computers and other devices for their child's education. Adding on, in my school, many teachers have used their phone as a privilege, and it has worked. It has made our students work hard, then play hard. This bill completely removes the decisions made by school boards. And not only them, but our parents too. With that, phones are not going anywhere. There's no devolving. With that being said, what would we gain from taking personal devices during passing period and lunch? It is not good to run from a problem. Restricting it and cutting it off completely, we can only restrict things for so long. With this bill, it just teaches kids to be sneaky, learn to hide from teachers, and rebel. We see this happening with the phone policy we have already. I see a lot of kids turning in their phone case instead of their phone loophole. They're turning in burner phones, loophole. Lying about where their phone is, loophole. There will always be loopholes. It is better to work with loopholes than try to close them, no? These students will only get more creative, and if we find a common ground with these students, I truly believe that we will get their attention and really get their interest in learning, because if we don't feel the need to find a loophole, there won't be any. If we find a feeling of choice, the feeling of trust, we will be more than likely to work, to stay focused. With this, we can strengthen the skills that employers value most, such as self-discipline. In this way, we can teach them to make the right decision when given a choice. And even then, I feel that if we are given time to do what we want after doing what we need, it will greatly improve our agility and motivate us to do better. I believe that personal devices, or phones at least, should be a privilege, something to earn. Once again, I'm against this bill, and I feel it will do more bad than good. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Seeing no questions, we'll move on to our second to last presentation, which will be Ed Rising. I will ask if Ed Rising can ensure they keep themselves to a good less than 5 minutes as we are getting close to 10 o'clock here. Hi, if you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony when you are ready.
Hello, my name is Paige Midget. I'm a student at Career Tech High School in Wasilla, Alaska. I'm testifying on SB 209. I generally oppose this bill because I feel that further clarification is needed. What exactly would a proficiency confirmation tool entail? Would it be similar to a standardized test? Is passing the proficiency test a requirement to graduate or just an addition to a student's diploma? If a student is unable to pass a proficiency test, are there going to be strategies put in place to ensure students become proficient? This policy could add an additional obstacle for students with disabilities, especially if proficiency is a requirement to graduate. Although this bill could help hold teachers and administrators accountable to state education standards, funding would be an issue. In my school, we lost 3 teachers last year and are expecting to lose several more this year. Class sizes have grown immensely and course offerings have been reduced. Similarly, summer school, which has been an option for students who haven't yet reached proficiency, has been cut at the secondary level in the Mat-Su Borough School District. This policy will add significant workloads to teachers that are already overwhelmed. If we cannot afford to employ enough teachers and provide summer remediation programs, how can we expect to enact new policy that will require significant funds? In conclusion, I urge you to vote no on SB 209 due to a lack of clarification and funding. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Are there any questions from committee members? Seeing none, we will move on to our last invited testifier today. It is the Executive Director of the Association for Alaska School Boards, Mr. Lon Garrison. And I'm going to say that you have 5 minutes.
Thank you, Chair Tobin. Good morning. My name is Lon Garrison. I'm the Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards, and I'm going to take far less than 5 minutes. I'll make this pretty brief. To wrap up today, I want to say that, you know, the testimony that you have been able to hear today, as we've done for many years, I think is exceptional, and I hope it makes an impression on the work and the thoughts that you have to put into the making the decisions that you as committee members and ultimately as the legislature have to make about public education. The Association of Alaska School Boards has for, you know, nearly 70-odd years advocated on behalf of school boards across the state of Alaska. And it's my privilege to be that executive director and to lead this. I have been involved in advocating for education now for 20 years, first as a school board member. I have been in this building every February for 20 years. And for 20 years, I have been saying nearly the same exact thing. And we're at a point now where that conversation is at an inflection point, and I think you've heard the stories today, that pretty soon public education will not work in the state of Alaska. And we have to do something. We have to be bold. And first, I want to say thank you and congratulate you for the boldness that you showed in the first half of the session by passing an increase in the base student allocation that was unprecedented. That was significant. But at the same time, we all know that the passage of that BSA increase did not make up for the true cost that districts are experiencing that are not met. And the other piece is that we have not strategically invested in education and infrastructure that needs to happen in order to make sure students have a great place to go to school and be effective in their learning. So for those of you that are involved in the Education Task Force, it's imperative that you visit rural, remote Alaska, because there are buildings that students are inhabiting and trying to get an education that are not appropriate. They're not appropriate at all. And it's not living up to the opportunity that the Constitution requires of the state of Alaska to make certain that every student in our state can receive a quality public education. So I won't go on much longer, but to say thank you. Thank you for giving these folks an opportunity to talk to you today. Thank you for keeping your eye on the ball, and thank you for working towards this. I know it's hard. Democracy is hard. But we do have to keep our eye on what is the greatest, one of the greatest resources this state has, and that's our children and the posterity that they bring to the state of Alaska. So with that, I'll close and say thank you very much. Happy to answer any questions anytime. I know you've got a busy day, and we have a number of folks needing to get to meetings. So again, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Garrison. Are there any questions or comments? President Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Garrison, for being here. I appreciate your comments about inviting the special committee to rural schools, but two issues I'd like to bring up. One is that involvement of all legislators in the school districts. We used to have a very progressive program with National Conference of State Legislators, making sure that every legislator was invited into the schools at one point. That's sort of fallen away. Many legislators do a great job. Some don't do anything. So I really think it's up to you to have an organized approach to making sure that every legislator is invited into the schools at one time or another. We're your advocates, and if we're not there, we can't advocate. The other thing had to do with student testimony today. One young lady, I think from Juneau, said that I have to miss school to come to testify. I think she should miss school more often to come to testify because she will really learn what it means to be a citizen. She will. I see your students here. They're standing up. They're saying things. They're able to speak to us in a very solid way. And I'd encourage more of that. I appreciate the student. We love our professionals, teachers, and principals, and superintendents, school boards. But what really moves this legislature, I think, is the student involvement. So those are two issues I really. I hope that you will work on in the next few years. Thank you.
And through the chair, I accept the challenge.
Well, thank you. Thank you, President Stevens. And I would be remiss if I did not note that this is President Stevens' last year with us, and he has been integral in establishing the education committees and doing the work that is clearly the most important work to be done in the legislature, which is investing in our kids. So I want to thank everyone once again, especially all who testified. I know it is not easy to come up before a group of legislators, especially when you are on the spot and definitely on camera. So I just want to applaud all of the students today, all the adults who brought them here, and I echo many of my fellow colleagues' remarks in that I'm very excited to see you all throughout today in the building, and we look forward to our conversations with many of you. This concludes today's agenda. I think we should all pat ourselves on the back for ending on time. That is such a significant feat. 4 years in, and we have finally done it together. The next meeting of the House Education Committee will be on Wednesday, February 11th at 8 a.m. The next meeting of the Senate Education Committee will be on Wednesday, February 11th at 3:30 p.m. Both of those meetings will feature overviews and discussion about Mount Edgecombe High School. As there is no other business before us today, I will adjourn today's joint meeting of the House and Senate Education Committee at 9:56 a.m.